Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, CFRO. I am your co-host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Krista Truman. Hi, Krista.
Good afternoon.
Along with our technician, John Pranger, who is running the controls. Our other co-host, Joanne Chang, is not in the studio with us here today, as she is currently attending the National Anti-Fur Day event at the Hotel Vancouver, but she'll be reporting to us live on location during our events segment in about 15 minutes. On the show today, after the news and upcoming events, I'll be presenting the lifestyle segment entitled Travel Tips and Recommendations for Compassionate Eating Part 1, based on my recent trip to the Caribbean, and we'll be offering advice for those who want to maintain an ethical and animal-friendly diet while away from their home on vacation or otherwise, but may not always know how to do so. I'll be giving some restaurant recommendations as well for San Juan, Puerto Rico. Lastly, for our feature interview, we'll be speaking to Jay Steele, who is not only a vegan cookbook author, but also a holistic health practitioner with a focus on nutrition and studying midwifery. We'll be speaking to her about vegan pregnancies and what you need to know for having a healthy pregnancy free of any animal products. Well, as you may have noticed, I was away for the past 2 weeks, and while I was playing hooky from the show here, I was on vacation on various islands in the Southern Caribbean. One thing I really like about traveling to exotic locations such as the Caribbean is the ability to explore these different places for the nature they have to offer, including the amazing wildlife that is often so abundant and normal there, but to us here in the Pacific Northwest is such a novelty and can be totally awe-inspiring. You get to see living creatures in these far-off places that you might never see here in Canada, and I always do try to make a point of connecting with the animals in my travels whenever I can. So I wanted to share with you my top 5 memories of animal encounters of my latest trip.
That sounds exciting.
Number 5, snorkeling in St. Lucia. Well, I snorkeled as much as I could at the different islands that we visited. I find myself fascinated with exploring the underwater world in these places where the water is so clear and where the sea life is so colorful and plentiful. All kinds of fish everywhere all around you to view and appreciate. I snorkeled at several different places, but what I especially remember about St. Lucia was seeing squid for the first time ever, alive that is. At first, I didn't even know what I was looking at when I came upon these fascinatingly weird-looking creatures under the water that weren't even moving. They were just sitting there motionless for most of the time in the water, each looking at me with their one big eye on the side of their head. They are really mysterious and unique creatures to observe.
Were they changing colors or doing anything?
No, do they do that? They were black.
I know cuttlefish do, but I wasn't sure about squid.
No, and I can only surmise that they were squid having, again, maybe I've seen a picture of squid before, but I was wondering, what are those creepy things? They're not fish, and they're just sitting there. Number 4, a pigeon frenzy in San Juan. We were walking through Old San Juan when we came upon the square where we happened to run into the most pigeons I had ever seen in my life in one spot. There were hundreds of them, all different kinds as well, and they weren't all the same looking. We approached them to get a picture, and an old man came to me with some bird food and put it in my hands, and immediately I had a swarm of pigeons perched on my hands and arms. They definitely were bold little pigeons, and it was a cool experience to be had. Number 3, Wilbur the pig in St. Kitts. We went to Cockleshell Beach in St. Kitts, and one reason why I had wanted to go here was because I had read about a pig named Wilbur who apparently lived at this beach. I had read that he was a wild boar who had been born on another beach with 2 siblings in 2002, and he had traveled over to the certain beach, which is a large tourist area to live at. He seems to be fairly independent, as he's there on his own will, but he's also cared for by the staff at the beach. There's a sign at the beach listing all of his hobbies, sleeping and eating. But I had read that he also likes to occasionally stroll down to the ocean to take a dip to cool off, which would surely be a sight. When I went to visit him, he was just lying there resting on a spot in the sand, and he had no problem with me petting him. He was a very tame, wild pig.
That's really cool. So did he have big tusks? Or?
Yes, he did.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
He did. I asked the man who was showing me him, is that a wild boar? And he said, yes.
Not so wild anymore.
Yeah, though. Yeah, a tame wild boar.
Right.
Number two, connecting with a sweet old friend named Boquita. Last April, when we had been in San Juan, we met a sweet little Spanish dog named Boquita who lived on the street with her owner. We fell in love with this little dog and went to visit her several times and bought her food as well and a water dish. It was sad to see her living in this kind of situation, and we weren't sure how well her owner was taking care of her. Anyways, we went to the same street corner this time to look for her and asked a street person about her who had told us she would show up there later. We were so delighted to see her there one night with her owner. It was a really special experience to connect again with this sweet little dog who we had fallen in love with, but not only that, to see that she was being well taken care of. She had a soft bed now to sleep on, and the owner told us that he was still taking her to the vet, and we could see that he was feeding her well as well. And number one, swimming with turtles in the ocean in Barbados. We went on a catamaran tour where you stop and jump in the ocean and suddenly you see sea turtles swimming all around you. They were wild, but they are tame apparently, and I had never seen a sea turtle so close up before. The water was so clear that it was really easy to see them under the water swimming all around you and to see the details in their shells and skin. It was truly an amazing experience, and that's why it's my number one. Some of the turtles were so huge as well, and one swam right underneath me, like maybe about 6 inches or less underneath me.
Wow.
Yeah, and he was enormous. And those are my top five animal experiences of my latest trip.
Those sea turtles can live like 100 mm-hmm. years or more, right?
Yeah, the bigger they are, the older they are. It was just incredible.
That is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on to our next topic. It may seem like we talk about food a lot on the show, and we do. You might wonder what food and food choices have to do with animals, this being an animal-focused show. Now, what I wanted to say is that the subject of food and food choices is definitely an animal-related and political topic when it comes to the treatment of animals, which is what this show is about. In fact, the largest impact you can make in your daily lives to lessen the harm on the living creatures of this planet takes place on your plate 3 times a day. So that's why we've been dedicating a portion of our weekly program to the subject of food and food choices.
Very well said, Alison.
I wanted to invite you, our listeners, to go online to our Facebook discussion page to give us your feedback on the content of our show. In general, it can be our feedback on basically anything that we've been having on our show. And if food is on your mind and you want to talk about that, please go on there and let us know. So if you think, for example, that we might be talking too much about one topic or another, or you'd like to see something else, please convey your thoughts about this by writing your comments on our Facebook page in the discussion area where I have already started a topic for this issue. Again, any other comments or suggestions are very much appreciated. And if you don't want to go on Facebook or you're not on there, you can also email us as well. Email or on Facebook is the best way, since we're not here to answer the phones during the show and often not afterwards. So our email address is radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or go on Facebook. Our Facebook group is called Animal Voices Vancouver. You can just search for that there, and again, it's on the discussion area.
Yes, and we very much welcome your feedback. We want to hear from you and what you're interested in hearing in, about on the show. And I just wanted to make one little comment of my own, and that is a lot of people think veganism is just about food, and of course that's a big part of it, because we eschew animal products and on our plates and everything else, but we also make a point of trying to avoid using animal products in the rest of our lives, including our clothing and our cosmetics, our medicines, that sort of thing. It's not always possible to completely avoid animal products, but for instance, we try to avoid companies that produce products that are made from animal testing, or even products from those companies that haven't been tested on animals, just because we try to boycott those companies in general. And that's a message that we tend to send no matter what. So while we talk about veganism a lot on the show, it makes sense because the three of us are vegan and we are going to end up bringing our personal viewpoints into things. It's important to understand that veganism is probably the first and number one thing that we think everybody should do if you are concerned about the plight of animals in the world. So that's
right.
Just what I
like
wanted
I
to
said
say.
If you want to do one thing to lessen your impact on the harm that is caused to animals in this world, start with your food choices.
That's right. So we do talk about food a lot on the show, but we, you know, we, everybody likes to eat.
We talk a lot about animals too, definitely.
Yes, we do.
Okay. So you are listening to 102.7 FM Co-op Radio on CFRO, a community radio station in Vancouver, BC, Canada. And now Krista has our weekly news for us.
Yes, and we are very lucky that Joanne put together a little some news pieces for us while she was away. I really appreciate my co-host being so thoughtful. Our first piece comes from the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. The Sea Shepherd ships, Steve Irwin and the Bob Barker, have successfully escorted the Japanese whaling fleet out of the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary. After repeated orders from Sea Shepherd to desist their illegal activities and remove themselves from the Southern Ocean whaling fleet, the Nishin Maru, Yushin Maru, Yushin Maru No. 2 and Shonan Maru No. 2 have crossed north of 60 degrees and continue to head north by northwest. We did not actually expect them to follow our orders to quit the whale sanctuary, but they have indeed exited and are now running outside the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary, said Captain Paul Watson. They have not killed a single whale since February 5th. We intend to turn 4 whaling free days into weeks. At 0500 hours on February 7th, the Nishin Maru was intercepted by the Steve Irwin at 64 degrees 2 minutes south and 80 degrees 11 minutes east. The whaling fleet then ran northeast for 95 miles on a course of 060 degrees and then changed course at 1600 hours on February 7th to 260 degrees and began to run northwest for 260 miles. The whaling fleet left the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary at 1830 hours Sydney time at 60 degrees south and 77 degrees east. That was on February 9th, 2010. The Sea Shepherd ships, Steve Irwin and Bob Barker, continue to chase the Japanese whaling fleet. We intend to keep on their tail and prevent any whaling operations for as long as our fuel reserves last, and that should be for another few weeks at least, said Bob Barker Captain Chuck Swift. The Sea Shepherd ships are with the entire whaling fleet, except the Yushin Maru No. 3. That ship has not been seen since the collision with the Bob Barker on February 6th. So good for the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society.
You said there was a collision on February 6th, or was that...
Yeah, they rammed the Bob Barker that day.
Okay, I need to look into that.
Because they'd already hit the Eddie Gill.
Right. Yeah, didn't know about that.
And the Eddie Gill collision actually caused an injury to one of the people on the Eddie Gill thing. So the Japanese clearly are being affected by the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society's actions, and that's good. We want to help the whales. Our next piece comes from Dover's Online. Last week, Yellowtail Wine, based in Australia, had established a new promotion with the Humane Society of the United States. The effort included an agreement for the winery to contribute $100,000 to HSUS. In just a few days, hundreds of farmers, ranchers, hunters, and pet breeders used, among other avenues, social media to urge Yellowtail's officials to reconsider their HSUS support. The Facebook group, Yellow Fail, quickly gathered more than 1,300 fans last week. The strong reaction from agribusiness is no surprise. As Humane Society of the United States is pressing for a ballot measure this November that would, quote, require the Ohio Livestock Care Standards Board to adopt certain minimum standards that will prevent the cruel and inhumane treatment of farm animals, enhance food safety, protect the environment, and strengthen Ohio family farms. We at Animal Voices would encourage our listeners to go out and buy yourselves a bottle or two or 12 of Yellowtail wine today. Well, 12. I have to work tomorrow. This one comes from, you know, you could also just go on to Facebook and find the Yellowtail fan page and post some words of support for them, because they are getting a strong reaction on Facebook. I was on there myself the other day, and it's an overwhelming number of comments from the agribusiness and animal husbandry business, negative comments saying they're going to boycott Yellowtail. So let Yellowtail know that you are going to continue to or start buying their product, just so that they don't feel too much pressure from the other side. Okay. So this one comes from alternet.org. While researchers and scientists investigate the cause of diabetes, obesity, asthma, and ADHD epidemics, they should ask why the FDA approved a livestock drug banned in 160 nations and responsible for hyperactivity, muscle breakdown, and 10% mortality in pigs, according to an angry farmer who phoned the manufacturer. The beta agonist ractopamine, a repartitioning agent that increases protein synthesis, was recruited for livestock use when researchers found the drug used in asthma made mice more muscular, says Beef Magazine. What a name.
I know.
But unlike the growth-promoting antibiotics and hormones used in livestock, which are withdrawn as the animal nears slaughter, ractopamine is started as the animal nears slaughter. As much as 20% of paline, given to pigs for their last 28 days, Optiflex, given to cattle for their last 28 to 42 days, and Tomax, given to turkeys during their last 7 to 14 days, remains in the consumer's meat, says author and well-known veterinarian Michael W. Fox. Though banned in Europe, Taiwan, and China, more than 1,700 people were, quote, poisoned from eating paline-fed pigs since 1998, says the Sichuan Pork Trade Chamber of Commerce. Ractopamine is used in 45% of U.S. pigs and 30% of the ration-fed cattle, says Elanco Animal Health, which manufactures all three products. Ractopamine is marked not for use in humans. Individuals with cardiovascular disease should exercise special caution to avoid exposure. Use protective clothing, impervious gloves, protective eyewear, and an NIOSH-approved dust mask. Yet it is considered safe to use on food. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency has approved ractopamine for use in Canada and on pigs and cows.
And did you want to share with us your last piece about...
Sure.
Yeah.
I just wanted
yeah.
to say about that one thing about paline was I read that it causes a 8% decrease in the amount of manure the animal produces, which... Like, where does the poo go? That's what I want to know. So last week, Joanne and I were talking about how at the G7 summit in Iqaluit this week, Canada's government was going to, and the Inuit nation were going to put on a special dinner for the guests at the summit, the European nations, and the main dish at the summit was going to be raw seal meat.
Yum.
And if you recall, these are mostly the nations that decided to put a ban on Canadian seal products in the last year. And
that was really hospitable of them then.
I know. And it was a very, very, it was a blatant attempt to confuse the separate issues surrounding the industrial and indigenous seal hunt. Mm-hmm. The Inuit seal hunt has absolutely nothing to do with the industrial seal hunt. And they sent these leaders home with goodie bags of seal skin. And
they made them sit on seal skin chairs.
Yes. The leaders at this meal where they're sitting on seal, they've banned the use of seal products in Europe from Canada. The leaders are sitting on sealskin chairs, and they have their little goodie bags with their sealskin mittens and their sealskin, I can't remember what else, vests or something.
No.
And they're fed this raw seal meat. And it turns out that the only person in attendance who ate the raw seal meat was the Canadian Minister Jim Flaherty. All the others declined to imbibe in the raw seal flesh. So
there's some food for thought. Thank you.
Indeed, yes.
Thank you, Krista. And now for upcoming events. Today, right now, there is it's National Anti-Fur Day, and there's a leafleting event happening at Snowflake Furs, which is located at the Hotel Vancouver at 900 West Georgia Street. This demonstration is happening until 1 p.m., and our own Joanne Chang is there. I can hear her on the phone. Hi, Joanne.
Hey!
Hi, Joanne!
So how is it going there, and how's
it's
the demo going?
It's a mad scene down here. All the media is here, international media. There's tons of people down here. And as soon as we got out here in front of the Snowflake Furs, security came out to talk to us because they said there's lots of important people because of the Olympics, mm-hmm. so we better behave.
And are you behaving?
Oh yes, we're always very friendly, which is kind of funny that they say something like this. But you know, something that really impressed me was that as soon as security start talking to us, the citizens, everybody has video cameras and they start documenting.
Right.
Oh, good.
Yes.
What is the feedback been by the people you've been passing out leaflets to and perhaps talking to on the street there?
It's great. We get lots of compassionate people, not just in Vancouver, but all tourists. So we're getting lots of positive feedback about how, you know, people support cruelty to animals. We're handing out tons of leaflets and getting tons of signatures. So, you know, this day and age, I think people are not tolerant of, you know, things like like seal hunt or fur.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Joanne. I hope you continue to have a fruitful time there.
Okay.
And we look forward to seeing you next week. Thanks for the work you're doing there today.
Thanks a lot,
thank
Joanne.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
A reporter on the scene.
Roving reporter from Animal Voices. Saturday, February the 13th, that is tomorrow, bright and early at 8:30 p.m., there is a 2010 heart attack event. It's called Clog the Arteries of Capitalism Protest. It's at Thornton Park in Vancouver. Several anti-capitalist, anti-colonial groups and individuals are organizing a demo respecting the diversity of tactics on February 13th at 8:30 a.m. Starting at Thornton Park, the theme is 2010 heart attack and is included or is intended to disturb business as usual on the first day of the Olympic Games. Supporters of the animal rights group Liberation BC will carry anti-seal hunt banners to represent the animals at this protest. If you would like to join them, please send an email to info@liberationbc.org. Saturday, February the 13th, also tomorrow, if you're on Vancouver Island, there is a demonstration against the commercial seal hunt in Nanaimo at starting at 10 o'clock a.m. For those interested, the demonstrators will be meeting outside the Departure Bay Ferry Terminal at the corner of Stewart Avenue and Brecon Road at 10 a.m. There they will protest and expose the atrocity of the seal hunt to people catching the 10:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. ferries. At 12:30 p.m., they will begin to walk along Stewart Avenue to Mafio's Sutton Park in downtown Nanaimo, a distance of approximately 3 kilometers. At 1 o'clock p.m., a rally will be held with Sparky the Seal, the gigantic seal mascot, in Mafio's Sutton Park off Comox Road on the Nanaimo waterfront downtown. So the rally will go until 2 o'clock p.m. There's also five notable speakers so far lined up to discuss the different aspects of this issue at the rally. On Thursday, February 18th at 7 o'clock p.m., there's veggie drinks at Shavana again, which is at 2340 West 4th Avenue in Vancouver, hosted by Earth Save Canada. This is a monthly social event and very popular. All flexitarians, vegans, vegetarians are welcome, as well as people who want to mingle with this kind of company. Shavana is a cool place with reasonably priced drinks and tasty vegan nibblies, a great ambience, lots of sofas and benches to be comfortable. To find out more and to register, go to meetup.com and look up Vancouver Meatless Meetup. And one more quick event, Tuesday, February the 23rd at 7 o'clock p.m., there will be a dine-out at, and that is a vegan dine-out at Pearl House, which is a Thai restaurant at 7152 Sperling Avenue in Burnaby, hosted by Earth Save Canada. The cost is $18 for non-Earth Save members and $15 for members, and everyone is welcome. Pearl House is a Taiwanese restaurant that's been open for 10 years. Come sample their specialties like homemade veggie chicken, stewed seaweed and bean curd, spicy hot and sour soup, noodles, and Taiwanese-style fried rice. You'll also get to try their famous Taiwanese bubble tea. And register in advance on meetup.com by searching for Vancouver Meatless Meetup. If you have an animal or vegetarian-related event coming up that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver. I'm just going to get a quick drink here because I got a lot of talking coming up.
I'm excited to hear all about your lifestyle segment.
Okay, yeah, my very first one.
Not that I ever really go traveling anywhere, but someday I might. You never know.
Okay, so I would like to share with you today some tips and recommendations for compassionate eating while you are traveling. And this is based on my recent experiences in the Caribbean. This will be part one of a series that I hope to continue on, as I do like to travel. And whenever I do, I always gain new information that I'd like to pass on to those who may find themselves in similar traveling situations as me. So what I mean by compassionate eating, as you may wonder, is choosing the foods you eat that cause as least harm as possible to your fellow creatures. And that is part of the vegan lifestyle, which follows a diet free of animal products and the many cruelties towards animals that come with that. It is usually much easier to eat compassionately when you are in your own home or city and in your own surroundings, where you can easily make your own food or where you know exactly where to obtain food that aligns with your personal values. When you step out of that safety zone, you can suddenly find yourself in unfamiliar territory, where making such food choices is not always so straightforward, and you may find it to be a challenge to maintain. However, I want to encourage you that there I want to encourage you all out there with the knowledge that this can be done with some forethought and preparation, especially for those just starting out with living a compassionate lifestyle. I know it can sometimes be hard to maintain your food choices when you're eating out and while traveling. We can often find ourselves, certainly in typical vacation destinations, surrounded by an abundance of animal foods, and it can be difficult to sift through all that to find something to eat that doesn't conflict with your ethics. I certainly find myself in these situations quite a lot, so here are some of my tips and recommendations to share with you. Firstly, I wanted to talk a bit about traveling on the plane. Airplane travel services have actually changed quite a bit in the last few years. It used to be that all airlines served cooked meals that were included in the price of the airfare, and thus you could take advantage of their special meals and order vegan, vegetarian, or Asian vegetarian meals in advance. Such is not the case anymore with domestic flights, and from the research I've done, it seems that pretty much all, if not all, airlines are only serving these special vegetarian meals for flights overseas and in first class. So that eliminates the special meals from a large percentage of flights that the average person will be taking, which I do find to be really quite unfortunate. There is now food for purchase on these domestic flights. However, in all the different airlines that I've tried in research, I have not found any that serve any animal product free meals. Some serve meals with cheese but no meat, but even those are just an assortment of prepackaged snacks that barely qualify as real food. So what this means is that the airlines essentially want vegans to starve on their flights. In order to avoid this from happening, what I suggest you do when traveling by plane and for your entire trip in general is to stock up well on non-perishable snacks that you can keep in a plastic bag in your carry-on luggage at all times, so that it is always handy whenever you need to draw from it. For this trip, for example, I bought a large bag of tamari roasted almonds from Costco that cost about $10 or $12, as well as a box of 12 Lara fruit and nut bars for $14, plus a bunch of assorted Luna bars, which for those of you who don't know, are yummy vegan granola type bars that come in many delicious flavors such as peanut butter, chocolate peppermint stick, and lemon zest. I bought them from Whole Foods, but you can also get them from other natural food stores such as Capers and as well as some regular grocery stores. The roasted almonds provided me my protein when I needed it, and the Lara and Luna bars were great for something sweet, chewy, and filling. For my boyfriend who loves fruit, I bought him cans of fruit to eat on the plane and at the hotel. Some of them had pull tabs on the lids, and for the others, well, I always carry a small can opener in my carry-on bag.
Always
prepared. Nope. Also, before leaving on the plane in Seattle, I bought some ready-made meals to go at Whole Foods, and for the two consecutive flights we had. One was a Thai wrap, and the other was a container of delicious sweet potato noodles. I was determined not to go hungry on this 10-hour flight. I have also been known to make a huge pot of spaghetti with tomato sauce at home before leaving and put it in a Tupperware container. A food source like that while traveling can really hit the spot when there really is nothing else around to eat. Moving on, we flew to San Juan, Puerto Rico.
I'm sorry, just one sec. Did you have any trouble with security getting food?
No, because it's domestic. It was from the States to the States.
Oh, okay. I see. I would be worried they'd want to throw everything out. Or
yeah, as long as they're not, it's not liquid or gel.
You don't want to
carry some, I don't know, Jello or something, which I wouldn't eat anyway.
Okay, right. Yeah. So you don't want to open it before you go security, though?
I mean, I've taken the spaghetti in my Tupperware before, okay, and it's been totally fine. Pre-open hummus, even though it's kind of a spread, it works.
No exploding hummus on the plane.
Anyway, so we flew to San Juan, Puerto Rico, where we stayed for several days before embarking on a cruise ship for 1 week. This is the second cruise I've been on in the second cruise line. For both cruises, I did quite a lot of research beforehand to get an idea of what my food options would be. And patronizing both of these cruise lines, which were Princess last year and Carnival this time, I found the vegan food situation to be pretty much the same with both. So there are two main options for eating while on a cruise. And yes, the food on cruise ships is all included with your cruise fee. You can eat at the casual buffet, or you can eat in the dining room for a more formal dining experience at a sit-down meal where you are waited on in a fancy restaurant. You might think that the formal dining room would offer the best vegan food, but I actually found this not to be the case. On the Princess cruise, we actually only ate once in the dining room, and on this Carnival cruise, we ate there twice. Most people eat in the dining room every day of their cruise, but I actually find the buffet food and experience to be much more enjoyable and accommodating. So to make a long story short, each of the three times I've gone to the dining room and have discovered that there were absolutely no vegan entrees on the daily menu for me to eat, I asked if they could make me a special meat and dairy-free meal, which I had read beforehand that they definitely do to accommodate special diets. And each of those three times, the waiter seemed to be perplexed and then was only able to offer me pasta with tomato sauce. Each of these three times,
boring.
I have to say that the pasta with tomato sauce was really delicious, but please, you can only eat that for dinner so often, which is why we went to the buffet a lot.
Exactly.
I should note, though, that apparently if you're a vegan or vegetarian and require a custom meal, you're supposed to speak to the maitre d' about it in the dining room the day before and order your meal then for the day after. This applies to both Princess and Carnival. I don't know why they require a whole day to know what they're going to be making for you for dinner, but the second time I went to dinner there on the trip, the waiter actually even told me to do that. However, we opted again to stick with the buffet for most of the week. Secondly, I should also note that on Carnival, they actually always had a vegetarian entree listed on their menu. One day it was an enchilada with cheese and sour cream, and I asked if they could give it to me without the cheese and the sour cream. However, the answer was no, because I was told that they were already pre-made with cheese. So if the vegetarian entree is something you can't eat, you may be out of luck with it. Now, the cruise ship buffets are a different story. Again, they are very, very meat and dairy centric, but because they offer such a large variety of foods, you can bet you will probably find a plateful of something there to satisfy your appetite. From what I remember, Princess actually had quite a few more vegan and vegetarian hot food options to choose from than Carnival did. On this Carnival cruise, most days I found myself relying on hearty salads from the salad bar as the basis of my meals, with no main courses to choose from. But what I liked about Carnival is that they actually always served up two or three delicious dishes that were technically salads, but in my world counted as a main staple. I remember a delicious marinated Thai eggplant one night, for example. There are also lots of good fruit options for dessert, and not much in the way of other dairy-free desserts, although in the dining room they did have sherbet there on the menu. For one more quick point, Princess apparently does have soy milk on offer for breakfast in the morning in the buffet, and the only caveat is that you have to ask a steward to retrieve it for you. Oh, and I must give a shout out for the three delicious veg soups that I had there during the last week that we were there. The first was a minestrone soup in the dining room, and the second and third were a potato and corn soup and a black bean soup, all very delicious, so look out for the vegetarian soups when you can find them. Finally, I wanted to give a few restaurant recommendations for San Juan, Puerto Rico, where we spent about half of our vacation. When I'm on vacation in foreign cities, half the fun of it for me is searching out vegetarian and vegan restaurants to eat at in the area. I love my food, and I love exploring the veg cuisines that a city has to offer. But not only that, doing a bit of research beforehand on where to eat in the area can save you a lot of time and trouble in finding some good and appropriate food to eat. I think the premier tool on the internet for searching out vegetarian businesses at all places around the world is happycow.net, which is my favorite. But a few others that I also reference are vegdining.com and vegguide.org. I find that if you check all three of these websites, you'll be sure not to miss out the great finds in the area. Yelp.com is also a good website to look at. So I'm really glad that I did find another Happy Cow search this year to see if there was any suitable veg-friendly restaurants in the area where we were first staying at in San Juan, which was Condado, because I happened to find a gem that wasn't there last year and is known as being the best vegan restaurant in all of the Caribbean.
Ooh.
This is a Pura Vida vegetarian bistro, which is all vegan and actually part of a hotel that labels itself as a vegetarian hotel, if you can imagine that.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, you can even buy room packages at this hotel where the food is included in the price. Now back to Pura Vida, this restaurant's food was very classy and high priced. Normally I don't pay prices like $90 Canadian for a dinner for two.
Wow.
I know.
Not even in
Vancouver. You kind of don't realize it's going to cost that much when you're just kind of ordering one item here and there, but that's what we did this time. And I didn't mind too much since it was definitely not only the best food in the area, but the only vegan food in the area. We ended up going to this restaurant twice, and it was a bit cheaper the second time at around $75 for two people, which isn't as bad. What I loved about this restaurant was that every listed dish looked delicious. They all were as well. The first night I had the Thai-style veggie chicken, and it was so good I am still thinking about it today. Mm. The other dishes I had were the tofu a la Creole, the pan-seared tofu steak in a soy and ginger sauce, and the Caesar salad. Oh, there were a few really good desserts as well, especially a coconut custard that I had the first night. Also, this isn't advertised on the website, but the waiter told me that they do a vegan brunch on Sundays as well, which I wish we could have attended. For more info, their website is puravidaveggiebistro.com. That's P-U-R-A-V-I-D-A. Secondly, I want to recommend a place to eat in Old San Juan, which is a very popular touristy area of the city, but has no completely vegetarian restaurants. So back to Happy Cow again, and I was led to a very convenient spot right across from the street from the Fort Cristobal that we had visited called Cafe Berlin. This wasn't a veg restaurant, but was very veg-friendly, and surprisingly so considering that San Juan as a whole is not. They had a space on their menu just for vegetarian entrees, and also had a good choice of veg appetizers and even a vegan carrot cake listed for dessert. I'd also read before that they serve soy ice cream as well, but this wasn't listed on the menu. The only downside of this place was that the prices were once again quite high, which may be a theme for San Juan, actually. But then again, when you're on vacation, you tend not to think too much about that kind of stuff. At Cafe Berlin, I had a warm tomato basil bread with a fervently garlicky and really delicious hummus to start with that as an appetizer. It was so good, but it was $8. And for my entree, I had a soy steak dinner platter, which consisted of two large nut loaf-like slices drizzled with a red wine sauce and caramelized onions and accompanied by baby red potatoes and baby carrots and broccoli, the vegetables I was really craving. This meal was pretty expensive at about $19 US, but it was really good and left me stuffed. Cafe Berlin's website is cafeberlinpr.com. Oh, and they do a Sunday brunch too with scrambled tofu. Finally, I want to quickly recommend a place to eat in the Isla Verde district, which is another touristy beach strip with a lot of hotels. Sadly, my prior research had not come up with any veg-friendly places to eat in this area, so we basically went on an egg hunt for something to eat by just walking up the Isla Verde Avenue. Restaurant after restaurant revealed nothing edible until a sign displaying the words Chinese restaurant captured my eyes. There's always something good to eat at a Chinese restaurant, right? The restaurant was called Asian Station, located in a strip mall right after a Burger King and next to a Baskin Robbins, and had a small offering of vegetarian dishes, and that's all we needed. We shared a vegetarian egg roll, and then I had the best and hottest hot and sour soup I've ever tasted, and then a mapa tofu dish with rice as the main meal. The dinner wasn't priced too bad either, $11 for the tofu dish, about $3 for the soup, and $1.50 for the egg roll. We enjoyed it so much, we came back the next night and had the same thing. They also had a Buddha's Delight dish and a broccoli with garlic sauce that looked intriguing. And I should also note that they actually had a real Chinese cook in the kitchen, so the food was authentic. So in the interest of time, I will close off my spiel now, and I hope that you've learned a thing or two that will take you, that you can take with you in your future travels.
That's great. I wonder if you could maybe put some of the names of those restaurants on our Facebook group.
Yeah, I was thinking of even just maybe posting this whole presentation.
That would be awesome,
yeah.
Just so people can research it in the future.
Okay, yeah. And now coming up, Krista.
Yes, today we're very lucky to have a guest on the show. Her name is Jay Steele. She's a Toronto area author of several vegan cook zines and two vegan cookbooks, Get It Ripe and the upcoming Ripe from Around Here. In addition to these contributions to the world of vegan cuisine, Jay is a holistic health practitioner with a focus on nutrition, and if that weren't enough, she's actually currently studying midwifery. That makes her an excellent person to talk to about being vegan throughout a pregnancy and the postpartum period. Welcome, Jay, and thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Hi,
yeah,
Jay.
It's really nice to hear your voice after so long. The first question I want to ask you is, what is the difference between a holistic nutritionist and a dietitian, and what are some of reasons why a person would choose to consult with a holistic nutritionist rather than a dietitian?
Well, I can really only speak to my experience as a holistic nutritionist. I know that even in the States and through other schools in Canada, there are different programs, but the way that I practice is that I look at the whole person, and I look at what's going on in my clients' lives and how they feel when they eat and where their food is coming from and all those things, as well as any particular health complaints that they may have. What I understand of dietitians is, and I certainly don't want to bad talk anyone at all, but I understand that they get a university science degree with a focus in nutrition. And, you know, while they're generally accepted as the nutrition experts in our mainstream health culture and are easier to find and are often covered by the government and stuff like that, there's a bit of a party line with registered dietitians, and it's, you know, it's more of a focus on very particular nutrients and calories and that kind of thing, and not so much on quality. So, you know, things that I'm interested in are whether food was organically grown or not, whether the servings of fruits and vegetables are fresh, or whether they're canned or raw or cooked, or if they're in the form of, like, fiber and enzyme-lacking juice. It seems that a lot of the material that comes out, you know, like the canned of food guide and that kind of stuff, doesn't necessarily specify with those.
Right.
It's kind of like comparing naturopaths to MDs or midwives to obstetricians.
Right. Yeah, gotcha. And they probably have less of an understanding or sympathy for a vegan diet, for instance.
It really depends on who you talk to.
Okay.
Some people will just say it's risky, and maybe those are the people who are giving Ensure milkshakes to people in hospitals to meet all their daily dietary needs.
Right, yes.
But I know that there are some dietitians who are far more progressive, like the books Becoming Vegetarian and Becoming Vegan were written by dietitians.
Right.
And there are other dietitians who are more progressive. It just kind of depends. I think maybe we're luckier in urban areas where we have more dietitians to choose from, possibly.
Right.
I mean, I don't know any personally, so I mean, I'm really only speaking from my kind of limited exposure.
Well, we've had a couple of very vegan-friendly dietitians on the show,
yeah.
So they definitely exist, and they definitely have a whole foods focus, but and it's nice to think that a holistic practitioner such as yourself looks at the entire person rather than just focusing on just the food that you're consuming.
Right, and there are also holistic nutritionists who won't come hear me speak because they don't believe that veganism is right.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay.
You know, it's
so
all
no generalizations.
Yeah, you can't really generalize.
Okay.
And, you know, to say for the most part, I think that alternative practitioners are more open to alternative diets. But,
right.
You know, you can't paint everyone with the same brush.
Okay. Well, as I'm sure you're well aware, our society seems to be obsessed with food and nutrition. We get conflicting messages all the time from the media and government about what foods we should be eating and in what amounts. And it seems that women are the target for this information. And at no other time in our lives are we targeted more than when we're trying to conceive a baby or when we're pregnant and nursing. I think it's even safe to say that vegan mothers face far more scrutiny of their diets than meat eating or even vegetarian mothers. Can you start by making the connection between pregnancy and healthy eating? It's often stressed by health practitioners, but the why it's stressed isn't always explained well.
Yeah, those things are important. It's kind of like you can talk about how much people need to quit smoking, for instance, but if people don't understand exactly why they're quitting smoking, that just feels like a drag. The same thing with quitting sugar or coffee or anything that we like a lot, but it really ties true as well for things where you need to know why you should be eating well. So with pregnancy, there's a few things to consider, which is that the food you're consuming is directly nourishing the fetus in your womb. So
right.
I don't know why it is that people can eat Big Macs or if I could say to someone, do you want to have a Big Mac baby or do you want to have an organic food box baby? There are people who would look at me like they didn't know what I was talking about. And
yeah.
Other people who are kind
right.
of more hip to nutrition stuff would get it. But the food, like your immune system is protecting your fetus during pregnancy, right? And so you need a healthy immune system, which is supported by good food and, you know, a good lifestyle as well. And also when your baby is born, the antibodies that you've given them protect your baby for the first 3 months of its life as it begins to develop its own immune system. So, I mean, obviously beyond that, breastfeeding is additional protection, but that's something to consider when helping your baby grow.
Right. Okay. So is it true that women are eating for two when they're pregnant?
Not exactly. It's a cute expression, but, I want to preface this by saying that I'm not super focused on calories at all. We didn't even really talk about them when I was in school that much because I think there's so many more considerations around food other than calories.
Right.
But it basically takes about 75,000 calories to build a baby.
Right.
So what you're looking at is a commitment of about 300 to 400 additional calories a day. So
okay.
For some people that might be, oh, I really thought it was more. And other people are like, oh, wow, I have to eat 300 or 400 more calories a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's not hard to do.
No, it's
at
not
all.
Hard to do at all.
I can do that without even trying.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like an extra small meal somewhere in the day. And, you know, your weight gain in pregnancy is really going to be attributed to not just the fetus. You know, like if your baby is 8 pounds, how is it that you gain 25 or 30 or 40 pounds? And really it's that there's also the placenta that's in there that's about a fifth of the baby's weight once it comes out, and also the amniotic fluid, and there's an expanded blood volume just to, you know, keep everything vascularized that's growing and expanding.
So what's the ideal weight gain for a pregnant mother? I've read something like 12 pounds. Is that?
No,
it depends on what size you are.
Yeah, I think that I'll talk to a lot of midwives who will say that they really don't even need their clients to get on scales. Another who asks their clients every single visit what their weight was at that visit. But, you know, getting away from numbers is usually a positive thing for most people, especially people who are uber self-conscious about their weight. Usually we say that the average person might gain between 25 and 35 pounds during a pregnancy. That might be a whole lot more if you were pretty slender to begin with. You might gain 40 or more pounds. Mm-hmm. And if you have a higher BMI, so if you're, which is a body mass index, so if you're larger, you won't actually need to gain as much weight. But really, it's about the quality of the food that people are eating. If people are eating well, like if you're sitting down and eating a ton of carrots every day and not like you're gorging on a chocolate cake every day, or even if you're just eating something that is well balanced and well rounded and that kind of thing, then I really don't worry about it too much. It's also about how women feel throughout their pregnancy.
For sure. Yeah, my midwife didn't measure me or weigh me at all during my second pregnancy, and that was just because they subscribed to the idea that if there's any kind of problem with your weight during your pregnancy, it will be visible and easy to tell that something's going on, and that's when they'll get you on the scale to see what's happening. So
yeah. So
it's often assumed that a woman is going to quit being vegan for the duration of her pregnancy and even beyond, because a vegan diet is said to be untenable when we're responsible for our baby's health. What would you say to that?
Wow. Do our ethics go out the window when we become pregnant?
Exactly.
Do our allergies go out the window when we become pregnant? Like, you know, I have to wonder about these things and who's making up these rules.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that any diet that's balanced and whole foods based is going to be supportive in growing a fetus.
Right.
So special considerations need to be made for when you're pregnant other than all naturally following a healthy diet, which you should anyways?
Not exactly, but I would just say that, you know, whether you're willing to eat anything and everything or whether you're eating a completely animal product free diet, it's just important that your diet is mostly good stuff. So that means fresh and ripe ingredients, lots of vegetables and fruit. Most people are not eating as much fruit and vegetables as they need to, which is a big problem. And, you know, it's only recently that the Canada Food Guide, coming back to dietitians, I guess, has changed, where it used to be that the biggest arc, do you know the food arc that I'm talking about? Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
It's kind of like in the States they have a pyramid, and here we have a bit of a rainbow. And it used to be that the largest part of the arc was grain products, but they've finally switched it, so now fruit and vegetables is the largest arc, which is what it should be.
Right.
So if you're eating, like, at least 50% fruit and vegetables, then you're good. I mean, some food animal sources are kind of like an easier way to get particular nutrients. So the big ones we hear about are, like, protein, calcium, iron, B12. But it just takes practice, really, to reset our food patterns that we've had since we were a kid, instead of focusing on what's not included in the diet, so like if we're omitting animal products.
So why do doctors then encourage mothers to not eat vegan while they're pregnant? It doesn't seem to make any sense.
I think it's because most of us need to wake up a little more around our food choices. The assumption is that the average person isn't taking as good responsibility as they should.
So really that education should start beforehand.
Of course.
Instill a balanced diet into your body and you'll be good.
Yeah. So I think that's where it's coming from.
Yeah, totally. And we hear a lot about the foods we're supposed to avoid, like caffeine and alcohol and a whole long list of animal foods like fish and eggs and raw milk products and cheese, which vegans don't have to worry about. What particular foods do you recommend for a vegan woman to consume while she's trying to get pregnant?
When she's trying to get pregnant.
When she's trying to conceive.
I love working with people who aren't pregnant yet but want to get pregnant, because it's such a fun time to do a whole bunch of detoxing. Because, you know, if your body's really clean, then that's going to foster a better environment for conceiving. And maybe cause less morning sickness and stuff like that too, which could be great. But yeah, so we'd work with, I'd work with a woman, you know, doing like a liver cleanse, or a colon cleanse, you know, just kind of really cleaning up the diet and maybe even doing some sauna detoxification therapy. Naturopaths know more about that than someone like a holistic nutritionist typically.
Okay.
But things that are really going to kind of clean up your body and make it ready so that your child isn't inheriting any more toxins from your fat stores than it needs to.
Right.
That makes total sense. Never thought of that before.
With that being said, it's not healthy to do any major detoxing during pregnancy because you don't want to be mobilizing toxins that could affect the fetus and cross the placental barrier. So in that case, you do want to stick to that kind of stuff before a pregnancy or after you're done breastfeeding, maybe before your next pregnancy.
Yeah, I'd heard that about nursing. You don't want to do any kind of cleanse while you're nursing because it just goes straight into your milk.
Yeah, so you want to be careful with that. But just to generally avoid crap is really good for conceiving as well.
That sounds like a good guideline for everybody.
Yeah, so, you know, reducing or avoiding sugar, soda pop, white bread products, high-sodium meat substitutes for those of us who are vegetarian and vegan, avoiding coffee, alcohol, especially non-organic wine that contains sulfites, and, you know, choosing higher folic acid-containing foods and making those as organic as possible. So things like leafy greens, asparagus, melon, berries, beans and lentils, and sunflower seeds.
Okay, awesome. What foods would you recommend for a vegan woman to consume during pregnancy to meet all of her daily requirements? Like building a new human from scratch, it's sometimes hard to know how much we're supposed to be eating and what we should be striving for and how to get it healthfully. So what advice would you give us to meet, say, like our protein, our calcium, our iron requirements, et cetera?
Well, even before all of that, I would highly recommend that people make sure that they're getting enough water in their day because they're increasing the amount of liquids in their body with the amniotic fluid and the extra blood volume and everything I mentioned before. So that's a really key point. So if you're typically drinking maybe 6 glasses of water, upping that up to at least 8, if not 12 glasses a day. And that can include herb tea. It just can't include caffeinated tea or, well, obviously, hopefully you're not drinking during your pregnancy. So alcohol definitely doesn't count.
But, or sugary pop or that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, none of those things. So basically just water and herb tea or, you know, a splash of juice in water is fine if that's going to make it more appealing to you.
Okay.
But making sure that you're drinking, you're storing your water in glass or stainless steel instead of storing it in plastic is also important because of hormone disruptors that can be leached out of plastic products.
Gotcha.
And then kind of going on to foods, you know, making fruits and vegetables, like I said, the base of your diet, at least 50% of the food you consume every day. So I'm a huge fan of things in the brassica family, so that includes collards and kale and broccoli and Brussels sprouts.
All the superfoods.
Yeah,
which we should eat anyways.
Well, yeah, everyone should be eating them, but they have a beneficial effect on your liver, and when you've got kind of more hormones working around in your body, then your liver is what processes the hormones, so it's good to be nurturing of your liver. Also, other greens like spinach and Swiss chard is an incredible food as well. What else can I think of? Oh, well, you know, like onions and garlic and ginger root are amazing, as well as fresh cilantro and parsley.
Onions, really?
All that good stuff.
What is it about onions that's so good for you?
Well, they have a sulfur compound that's actually beneficial for the body, and they improve circulation.
Mm-hmm. And they're cold-fighting, like immune boosters.
Yeah, they're immune-boosting and stuff like that. I mean, if you're having issues with any of these foods, then they're not good for you.
Right.
Like, just because the food is good for you, it doesn't mean it's good for you, Krista, or me, Jay, or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Right, of course.
That's a bit of trial and error. But it's good to know, like, which are going to be your best options. And then also, you know, like I said, brightly colored vegetables like carrots and sweet potatoes and bell peppers are going to have a bunch of antioxidants and beta carotene and stuff like that.
Cool. Okay, so tell us a bit about supplements. I was told over and over again to make sure I was taking a prenatal that was high in folate and iron and vitamin D. Do you think that supplements are a necessary part of a healthy pregnancy?
Yeah, I was really excited when you told me you were going to answer this question because I get to talk about my new favorite topic.
All right.
So it really depends on how wholesome and varied the diet is, both before pregnancy and during the pregnancy. I get nervous when I tell people that I'm a nutritionist that they're going to think that I'm a supplement pusher.
Right.
Because I definitely don't want to be one of those. But there's something that people mostly don't understand about their food choices, that when you eat something that's refined, like let's take white sugar as an example, not only are you not getting vitamins and minerals that your body needs, so, you know, they talk about empty calories,
right,
but you're actually taking something away from your body's existing stores.
Okay.
Because your body needs B vitamins and zinc and chromium and magnesium and iron to turn the sugar into usable energy. So it's like drawing on a bank account that has no money in it.
Right.
So with that being said, supplements can help us get out of debt, in a sense. So, you know, it's one thing to be eating well during pregnancy, but even what you've been doing beforehand can be taken into consideration. And you certainly don't want to mess with a lack of nutrients when mm-hmm. you're growing a baby that's completely dependent on you.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's as simple as taking a prenatal multi, which can also be taken through the time that you breastfeed, that would be good. Many women have trouble stomaching supplements during their pregnancies.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, I've heard that lots of people have more success on whole food supplements, like New Chapter's line of products.
Okay. Yeah, I find even when I'm not pregnant, I tend to get kind of queasy if I take a multivitamin and
I don't have
food with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you can't take it on an empty stomach. That always makes me nauseous.
Yeah, it's best to take supplements always with food just because it will balance out in your body better.
Mm-hmm.
There are also particular superfoods that will boost the nutrition in your diet, even though they're not, you know, in tablet or capsule form. But, like, sea vegetables are amazing for their mineral content. And spirulina is really easily absorbed, and it's 60% amino acids, which is the building blocks mm-hmm. for protein.
Right.
And also it's a good source of beta carotene and GLA and that kind of stuff. And also making sure that you're getting enough fiber is really important throughout your pregnancy. So that can be, you know, just part of your regular diet, but very important, especially when your digestive system can get all wonky during pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
to be consuming, like, freshly ground flax seeds and legumes and, you know.
You pretty much want to keep the male moving at that point.
Indeed, you definitely do. And also to help balance things out, turmeric and cinnamon, you can take about 2 teaspoons of each daily.
Ah.
Is good for balancing blood sugar levels and, again, looking after the liver.
Oh, I never heard that about turmeric. That's interesting.
Turmeric's amazing for your liver.
Okay.
And but actually, my naturopath even suggests that anytime anyone heats up a little bit of oil in a pan, like if you're going to saute anything, you just put a pinch of turmeric in.
Oh, that's smart.
So, you know, all your food will be yellow and you will stain everything in your kitchen, but your liver will be happier.
Indeed.
But really, like, the fiber and the and the eliminating sugar is also going to help avoid gestational diabetes and that kind of thing. More prevalent in non-vegans, but still.
That's awesome. One thing that some people find humorous to talk about are pregnancy cravings. And I wanted to ask you, in your opinion, why do some women have strange or powerful cravings for certain foods? Is it some kind of nutritional deficiency?
Yeah, it's really, it's hard to say for sure. It could be. I know that sometimes people actually crave foods that they're allergic to. So some people will not, I don't know if vegans necessarily crave milk, but people in general will, for instance, crave milk if they're lacking calcium in their diet, but they're not actually absorbing it properly.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that you think, oh, calcium, this source, but really it's that you're so allergic to it that you can't absorb it properly. So it could be that if you're craving peanut butter, for instance, that maybe that's actually something you're intolerant to, but you are looking for rich flavors and a strong source of proteins and fats or something
right.
like that. It's hard, you know, it's hard to make sense of it because for us, food is so wrapped up in comfort.
Yeah, it can be very psychological, yeah.
So I, you know, I encourage, again, clients to remember that they're building their babies.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you might take the craving as an indicator. So if you walk past, like, a street vendor and you're like, oh, I really want a veggie dog, you can consider the fact that it's high in sodium and gluten and soy and fat and all that stuff. And maybe you can, you know, make a beeline for home or call your partner on the way home and be like, can you marinate some portobellos this evening? And so gravy. And then you're getting that saltiness and the richness of flavors, but it's not as much of a detriment to your diet. I mean, I would all say that, you know, we're human and going for pleasure over nutrition from time to time is nothing to feel guilty about. I really hate the way that...
Thanks for saying that, because, you know, some people have a very Puritan ethic about their food, and it can seem intimidating. And then, you know, you get wrapped up in the whole psychology of almost disordered eating. So you have to be...
Yes.
Even
it's
when you're pregnant...
to enjoy your food and everything in moderation.
So
I hate talking about guilt-free food.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm finally.
Well, you just reminded us about the guilt, so thank you.
Thanks so much. We have to wrap things up, so can you just take a quick moment and let us know what's coming up for you and maybe let people know how to get in touch with you if they want some nutritional guidance?
Yeah. So my second cookbook, which has more of a local and sustainable food focus, is coming out in April.
Excellent.
And, you know, you can already pre-order it from the online booksellers. If you can go to your local indie bookseller, that's even better to pick it up. Being in midwifery school at Ryerson University, that takes a lot of my time right now.
For
but
sure.
I might put out some e-books this year. I'm not sure. I'll be touring a bit with this book, too. So I'm going to be in Pennsylvania in July for the North American Vegetarian Society Summerfest.
Oh, great.
And I hear there's plans for me to come to Vancouver. I don't know much about it, so wow. I can keep you posted on that one.
Oh, please
do. Really, I'm online a lot. So it's really easy to get a hold of me through Twitter or Facebook. My first name is spelled J-A-E, just so people, when they're looking
right.
for J Steele, they're spelling it right. And, you know, I update my blog pretty regularly. It's domesticaffair.ca.
I love your blog.
It's
great.
That out.
Very humorous.
Thanks, Jay.
That's very kind. Yeah, so and people can also get a hold of me through my blog if they want to do phone consultations, which is what I do for people outside of Toronto.
Okay, well, thanks so much for coming on and discussing with us.
Well, thank you kindly
we'll
for having
me.